Chapter 12. How Not to Die from Suicidal Depression. Healthy food can have a powerful effect on mood. But don't only take my word for it, take Margaret's too. After hearing me speak at her church, she sent me this email. Dear Dr. Greger, I was diagnosed with clinical depression by a psychiatrist when I was 10 years old. I spent all my teenage years and 20s on a cocktail of medications for depression. Even on medications, I was still haunted by intrusive thoughts of suicide on a daily basis. Worse yet, the medications gave me headaches, nausea, and vivid, often frightening dreams. I was sleepy all the time, and despite the scary dreams, I had a nap every day. I slept a lot, a couple hours midday, and then close to 10 hours every night. Even with these side effects, I was afraid not to take these medications because I really wanted to live, and I was scared that without meds, I might get so depressed I would kill myself. Eventually, I got married and divorced. I was hospitalized several times during my marriage for depression. To be honest, I just never had any sex drive, and my husband took it personally. I guess I'll never know if my missing libido was just a side effect of all the medications I was on or the depression itself. About 9 years ago, I heard you speak at my church. I realized I'd just spent the last 2 decades on a medication-induced haze, and without ever feeling good a single one of those days, I talked to my psychiatrist about how I wanted to completely overhaul my diet and try to back off on the medications under her supervision. Much to my surprise, she was supportive. Well, I've been whole food and plant-based for 9 years and haven't had a further relapse. Not that I haven't been sad from time to time, but I haven't had any more thoughts of suicide or any more hospitalizations. I sleep like a normal person now. Everyone tells me I'm a different person since I changed my diet. I just wanted to thank you. My fiancé would like to thank you, too. I owe you my life. How can you prevent death by suicide? For those unfamiliar with the ravages of mental illness, the flippant answer is just don't do it. In fact, death from other leading killers such as heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and hypertension may be just as much a choice as death from suicide, since psychiatric disorders can cloud your judgment. Nearly 40,000 Americans take their lives each year, and depression appears to be a leading cause. Thankfully, lifestyle interventions can help repair your mind as well as your body. In 1946, the World Health Organization defined health as, quote, a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. In other words, you can be in excellent physical shape, enjoying low cholesterol, healthy body weight, and good overall physical fitness, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're healthy. Mental health can be just as important as physical health. Major depression is one of the most commonly diagnosed mental illnesses. An estimated 7% of American adults suffer from serious depression. That's about 16 million people who have had at least one depressive episode each year. Now, everyone feels sad occasionally. A full range of emotions is part of what makes us human. Depression, however, is not just sadness. It is characterized by weeks of such symptoms as lower sad mood, diminished interest in activities that used to be pleasurable, weight gain or loss, fatigue, inappropriate guilt, difficulty concentrating, and recurrent thoughts of death. Indeed, major depression can be a life-threatening ailment. Good mental health isn't, merely the absence of disease, though. Just because you're not depressed doesn't mean you're happy. There are 20 times more studies published on health and depression than there are on health and happiness. In recent years, however, the field of positive psychology has emerged, focusing on the relationship between optimal mental and physical health. Growing evidence indicates that positive psychological well-being is associated with reduced risk of physical illness. But which came first? Are people healthier because they're happy? Or are people just happier because they're healthy? Prospective studies that follow individuals over time have found that people starting out happier do indeed end up healthier. An analysis of 70 such studies on mortality concluded that, quote, positive psychological well-being has a favorable effect on survival in both healthy and diseased populations. Those who are happier appear to live longer. Not so fast, though. While positive mental states may be associated with less stress and more resilience to infection, positive well-being might also be accompanied by a healthy lifestyle. In general, people who feel satisfied appear to smoke less, exercise more, and eat healthier. So, is being happier just a marker of good health and not a cause of it? To find out, researchers set out to make people sick. Scientists at Carnegie Mellon University took hundreds of individuals, some happy, some unhappy, and paid them $800 each to be allowed to drip the common cold virus into their noses. Even if someone with a cold sneezes right in your face and the virus gets into your nose, you won't get sick automatically because your immune system may be able to fight it off. So the study question was, whose immune system would be better at fighting off the common virus? Those in the group initially rated as happy, peppy, and relaxed, or those in the group who were anxious, hostile, and depressed? About 1 in 3 of the negative emotion individuals failed to successfully fight off the virus and came down with a cold. But only 1 in 5 of the happy individuals became sick, even after the researchers took into account such factors as subject sleep patterns, exercise habits, and stress level. In a subsequent study, the researchers even exposed subjects, who had also been paid, to the influenza virus, a much more serious infection. Once again, increased positive emotions were associated with decreased verified illness rates. Happier people, it seems, are less likely to get sick. So mental health does appear to play a part in physical health. That's why it's crucial that the food we eat support both your mind and your body. As you'll see, common foods, from leafy green vegetables to your basic garden variety tomato, may positively affect your brain chemistry and help ward off depression. In fact, even simply smelling a common spice may improve your emotional state. But avoiding the blues is not just about eating your greens. There are also components in certain foods that may increase the risk of depression, such as arachidonic acid, an inflammation-promoting compound found mostly in chicken and eggs in the diet that is blamed for potentially impairing mood by inflaming the brain. Arachidonic acid. Studies on the emotional health and mood states of those eating plant-based diets suggest that eating less meat isn't just good for us physically, it's good for us emotionally, too. Researchers employed 2 psychological tests, the profile of mood states and the depression and anxiety stress scale. The first measures levels of depression, anger, hostility, fatigue, and confusion. The second gauges other negative mood states as well, including hopelessness, lack of interest, anhedonia, which is lack of pleasure, agitation, irritability, and impatience with other people. Subjects eating plant-based diets appear to experience significantly fewer negative emotions than omnivores. Those eating better also reported feeling more vigor. The researchers offered 2 explanations for their findings. First, people eating better diets may be happier because they're healthier. Those eating plant-based diets don't just have lower rates of many of the leading killer diseases, but also appear to have lower rates of such annoying ills as hemorrhoids, varicose veins, and ulcers, fewer surgeries, fewer hospitalizations, and only about half the odds of being on drugs, including tranquilizers, aspirin, insulin, blood pressure pills, pain medications, antacids, laxative sleeping pills. And being able to avoid doctor visits and health insurance hassles would make anyone less irritable, stressed, and depressed. The researchers also suggested a more direct explanation for their results. Maybe the pro-inflammatory component arachidonic acid found in animal products can, quote, adversely impact mental health via a cascade of neuroinflammation, unquote. The body metabolizes arachidonic acid into an array of inflammatory chemicals. In fact, that's how anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin and ibuprofen work to relieve pain and swelling, by blocking the conversion of arachidonic acid into these inflammatory end products. Maybe the mental health of omnivores was being comparatively compromised by inflammation in their brains. Inflammation isn't always bad, of course. When the area around a splinter gets all red, hot, and swollen, it's a sign that the body is using arachidonic acid to mount an inflammatory response to help fight off infection. But your body already makes all the arachidonic acid you need from scratch, so you don't need to take in any more via your diet. In this way, arachidonic acid resembles cholesterol, another essential component that the body makes all on its own. When you add excess amounts through diet, it may upset your system's internal balance. In this particular case, the researchers suspected arachidonic acid intake might impair the body's emotional state. There are data suggesting that people with higher levels of arachidonic acid in their blood may end up at significantly higher risk of suicide and episodes of major depression. The top five sources of arachidonic acid in the American diet are chicken, eggs, beef, pork, and fish, although chicken and eggs alone contribute more than all the other top sources combined. Just a single egg's worth of arachidonic acid a day may significantly raise arachidonic acid levels in the blood. Overall, omnivores appear to consume about 9 times more arachidonic acid than those eating plant-based diets. The study showing improved moods and emotional states in those eating plant-based diets was a cross-sectional study, meaning it was a snapshot in time. What if people who start out mentally healthier go on to eat healthier too, and not the other way around? To show cause and effect, researchers would have to perform an interventional study, the gold standard of nutritional science, gather subjects, change their diets, and see what happens. The same research team did just that. They took men and women who ate meat at least once a day and took away their eggs and chicken, along with other meats, to see what would happen to their moods. Within just 2 weeks, the study subjects experienced a significant improvement in measures of their mood states. The researchers concluded, "Perhaps eating less meat can help protect mood in omnivores, particularly important in those susceptible to affective disorders such as depression." Given these results, another research team decided to put a healthy diet to the test in a workplace setting, where healthy bodies and minds could potentially translate into improved productivity and elevate the mood of shareholders as well. A group of overweight and diabetic employees at a major insurance company was encouraged to follow a whole food, plant-based diet, cutting out all meat, eggs, dairy, oil, and junk foods. There was no portion size restriction, no calorie counting, no carb tracking, and participants were explicitly told not to change their exercise habits. Meals were not provided, but the company cafeteria did start offering such daily options as bean burritos and lentil and minestrone soups. A control group of employees received no dietary advice. Despite the dietary restrictions, over the course of about 5 months, the plant-eating group reported greater diet satisfaction than the control group. How well did they do? The plant-based group experienced improved digestion, increased energy, better sleep, as well as significant improvements in their physical functioning, general health, vitality, and mental health. No surprise, then, that they showed measurable improvements in work productivity, too. Based on this success, a much larger study of plant-based nutrition was conducted at 10 corporate locations across the country, from San Diego, California, to Macon, Georgia. The same resounding success was reported, showing improvements not only in subjects' body weight, blood sugar levels, and ability to control cholesterol, but also in their emotional states, including depression, anxiety, fatigue, sense of well-being, and daily functioning. Fighting the blues with greens. Here's a statistic you probably haven't heard. Higher consumption of vegetables may cut the odds of developing depression by as much as 62%. A review in the journal Nutritional Neuroscience concluded that, in general, eating lots of fruits and vegetables may present a non-invasive, natural, and inexpensive therapeutic means to support a healthy brain. But how exactly? The traditional explanation of how depression works, known as the monoamine theory, proposes that the condition arises out of a chemical imbalance in the brain. The billions of nerves in your brain communicate with each other using chemicals called neurotransmitters. Your nerve cells don't physically touch one another. Instead, they manufacture and deploy neurotransmitters to bridge the gap between them. The levels of an important class of neurotransmitters called monoamines, which include serotonin and dopamine, are controlled by an enzyme called monoamine oxidase, known as MAO, that breaks down any excess monoamines. people who are depressed appear to have elevated levels of this enzyme in their brains. Thus, the theory goes, depression is caused by abnormally low levels of the monoamine neurotransmitters due to elevated levels of the neurotransmitter munching enzyme. Antidepressant medications were developed to try to boost the levels of neurotransmitters to offset their accelerated breakdown. But if the excess MAO is responsible for depression, why not just develop a drug that blocks this enzyme? Such drugs do exist, but they have serious risks, not the least of which is the dreaded cheese effect, in which eating certain foods, such as certain cheeses, cured meats, and fermented foods, while on the drug, can potentially cause fatal brain hemorrhaging. If only there was a way to tamp down the monoamine oxidase enzyme safely. Well, it turns out that many plant foods, including apples, berries, grapes, onions, and green tea, contain phytonutrients that appear to naturally inhibit the MAO, as do such spices as cloves, oregano, cinnamon, and nutmeg. This may explain why those eating plant-rich diets have lower rates of depression. Even on a day-to-day basis, studies have shown that the more fruits and vegetables you eat, the happier, calmer, and more energetic you may feel that day, and this positivity can spill over into the next day. For your diet to have a meaningful psychological impact, though, you may need to consume approximately 7 servings of fruits or 8 servings of vegetables each day. Seeds and serotonin. Although some plant foods contain significant amounts of serotonin, the so-called happiness hormone, serotonin can't cross the blood-brain barrier. This means that dietary sources of serotonin can't make it up into the brain, but the building block of serotonin, an amino acid called tryptophan, can get from your mouth to your blood to your brain. Tryptophan depletion experiments in the 1970s showed that people given specially concocted tryptophan-deficient diets suffered from irritability, anger, and depression. So if you give people extra tryptophan, will they feel better? Well, that's the theory. However, in the 1980s, certain tryptophan supplements created a debacle, causing a rash of deaths. But if tryptophan is an amino acid, and if proteins are made out of amino acids, why can't you just give people high-protein meals to boost their serotonin levels by delivering extra tryptophan to the brain? It's been tried, and it's failed. Likely because other amino acids in protein-rich foods crowd out the tryptophan for access to the brain. However, carbohydrate ingestion does the opposite. It helps shunt many non-tryptophan amino acids out of the bloodstream and into the muscles, allowing tryptophan greater access into the brain. For example, having a carb-rich breakfast like waffles and orange juice resulted in higher tryptophan levels in those studied than did a protein-rich breakfast of turkey, eggs, and cheese. This principle may explain why women suffering from premenstrual syndrome, PMS, sometimes crave carbohydrate-rich food. Consumption of even a single carb-rich protein-poor meal has been shown to improve depression, tension, anger, confusion, sadness, fatigue, alertness, and calmness scores among women with PMS. In a year-long study, about 100 men and women were randomly assigned to eat either a low-carb or high-carb diet. By the end of the year, the subjects eating the high-carb diets experienced significantly less depression, hostility, and mood disturbances than those on the low-carb diet. This result is consistent with studies finding better moods and less anxiety among populations eating diets higher in carbohydrates and lower in fats and protein. Carbohydrates may facilitate tryptophan transport into the brain, but you still need a dietary source of tryptophan. Ideally, it would have a high tryptophan-to-protein ratio to facilitate brain access. Such seeds as sesame, sunflower, or pumpkin may fit the bill. Indeed, a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial of butternut squash seeds for social anxiety disorder reported a significant improvement in objective measure of anxiety within an hour of consumption. All these factors may contribute to the comprehensive improvement in mood one may achieve after just a few weeks on a plant-based diet. Saffron. The earliest recorded medical use of a spice appears to be more than 3,600 years ago when saffron was evidently first used for healing. A few thousand years later, scientists finally put saffron to the test in a head-to-head trial against the antidepressant drug Prozac for the treatment of clinical depression. Both the spice and the drug worked equally well in reducing depression symptoms. As I'll note in a bit, this may not be saying much, but at the very least, the saffron was safer in terms of side effects. For example, 20% of the people in the Prozac group suffered sexual dysfunction, a common occurrence with many antidepressant medications, whereas no one in the saffron group did. However, saffron may be one of those rare cases in which the natural remedy is more expensive than the drug. Saffron is the world's most expensive spice. It's harvested from crocus flowers, specifically the dried stigmas, the thread-like tips inside the flower, which are ground up to make the spice. You need more than 50,000 crocuses, enough to cover a football field, to produce just a single pound of saffron. A Prozac equivalent dose of saffron may cost more than twice as much as the drug, but a subsequent study found that even just smelling saffron appeared to have psychological benefits. The researchers diluted the spice so much that the study subjects couldn't even detect its odor. They still noted a significant drop in stress hormones measured in women who sniffed the saffron for 20 minutes compared to those who spent 20 minutes smelling a placebo, along with significant improvements in the women's symptoms of anxiety. So if you're feeling anxious, perhaps wake up and smell the saffron. Coffee and aspartame. Speaking of waking up to pleasant aromas, a cup of coffee may be doing more for the brain than just making it feel less groggy in the morning. Researchers from Harvard University looked at data from three large cohort studies of more than 200,000 American men and women. They found that people who drank two or more cups of coffee daily appeared to have only half the suicide risk compared to non-coffee drinkers. What about drinking more than four cups a day? A Kaiser Permanente study of more than 100,000 people found that suicide risk seemed to continue to drop with increases in coffee dose. People who drank more than six cups a day were 80% less likely to commit suicide, though drinking eight or more cups a day has been associated with increased suicide risk. What you put in your coffee may also make a difference. The NIH-AARP study, which followed hundreds of thousands of Americans for a decade, found that frequent consumption of sweetened beverages may increase the risk of depression among older adults. Indeed, adding sugar to coffee may negate many of its positive effects on mood, and adding the artificial sweetener aspartame, found in Equal and NutraSweet, or saccharin in Sweet and Low, was associated with an increased risk of depression. The controversy surrounding the neurological effects of aspartame began in the 1980s. At first, concern was limited to those with pre-existing mental illness. An early study at Case Western Reserve University was halted prematurely for safety reasons because subjects with a history of depression appeared to be experiencing such a severe reaction to the sweetener. The researchers concluded that, quote, individuals with mood disorders are particularly sensitive to this artificial sweetener, and its use in this population should be discouraged. Only recently, though, were the neurobehavioral effects of aspartame investigated in a population free from mental illness. Healthy individuals were split into two groups. Half were given a higher dose of aspartame, the equivalent of about 3 liters of Diet Coke's worth, and the other half received a lower dose, like a single liter of Diet Coke's worth. Then the groups were switched. Bear in mind that the higher aspartame diet contained just half the acceptable daily intake of the stuff as determined by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. After only 8 days on the higher aspartame dose, participants exhibited more depression and irritability and performed worse on certain brain function tests. So not only may aspartame cause adverse mental effects in sensitive populations, but it may also harm the general public at sufficient doses. Avoiding diet soda and those pastel paper packets seems easy enough, but artificial sweeteners are also present in more than 6,000 products, including breath mints, cereals, chewing gums, jams and jellies, juice drinks, puddings, and even nutritional bars and yogurts. This prevalence has led researchers to assert that aspartame, quote, is impossible to completely eradicate from daily encounters, unquote. But of course, that's only true for people who eat processed foods. this is yet another reason to spend most of your time at the grocery store in the produce aisle. Discriminating shoppers make it a priority to read ingredients lists, but the healthiest foods in the supermarket don't even have them. Exercise versus antidepressants. We've known for decades that even a single workout can elevate mood, and that physical activity is associated with decreased symptoms of depression. One study of nearly 5,000 people across the country, for example, found that people who exercised regularly had 25% lower odds of major depression diagnoses. Of course, studies like these may not mean that exercise reduces depression. Maybe it means that depression reduces exercise. In other words, if you're depressed, you might feel too lousy to get out of bed and go for a walk. What was needed to test this idea was an interventional study, one in which depressed subjects were split at random, randomized, into two groups, one that exercised and one that didn't. That's what a team of researchers at Duke University attempted. They randomly assigned depressed men and women aged 50 or older to either begin an aerobic exercise program or take the antidepressant drug sertraline, known as Zoloft. Within 4 months, the mood of those in the drug group improved so much that they were, on average, no longer depressed. But the same powerful effect was found in the exercise group. That is, the group of people who weren't taking any drugs. Exercise, it seemed, to work just as well as the medication. Let's play devil's advocate for the moment. The drug-free group in the Duke study met 3 times each week for an exercise class. Could the social stimulation, rather than the exercise, have improved their mood? With this question in mind, the same researchers subsequently conducted the largest ever exercise trial of patients with depression. This time, they added a group. So one group took antidepressants, one group took an exercise class, and a new group did exercises by themselves at home. The results? No matter the setting, whether subjects were alone or in a group, exercise appeared to work about just as well as drugs at bringing depression into remission. So, before your doctor writes you a prescription for an antidepressant, ask about prescribing a daily workout instead. Antioxidants and folate. Accumulating evidence suggests that free radicals, those highly unstable molecules that cause tissue damage and contribute to aging, may play an important role in the development of various psychiatric disorders, including depression. Modern imaging techniques confirm autopsy studies showing a shrinkage of certain emotion centers in the brains of depressed patients that may be due to death of nerve cells in these areas caused by free radicals. This phenomenon may help explain why those eating more fruits and vegetables, which are rich in antioxidants that extinguish free radicals, appear to protect against depression. A study of nearly 300,000 Canadians found that greater fruit and vegetable consumption was associated with lower risk of depression, psychological distress, mood and anxiety disorders, and poor perceived mental health. The researchers concluded that eating antioxidant-rich plant foods may dampen the detrimental effects of oxidative stress on mental health. The Canadian study relied on questionnaires asking people to self-report fruit and vegetable intake, a method that's not always accurate. A nationwide American study took it one step further and measured the level of carotenoid phytonutrients in people's bloodstreams. These phytonutrients include some of the yellow, orange, and red antioxidant pigments found naturally in some of our healthiest foods, including sweet potatoes and green leafy vegetables. Not only did people with higher levels of these nutrients in their bloodstreams have a lower risk of depression symptoms, but there was also an apparent dose-response relationship, meaning that the higher the levels of these phytonutrients, the better people seemed to feel. Among the carotenoids, lycopene, the red pigment in tomatoes, has the highest antioxidant activity. Indeed, a study of nearly 1,000 elderly men and women found that people who ate tomatoes or tomato products daily had just half the odds of depression compared with those who ate them once a week or less. If antioxidants are so helpful, why can't we just pop a few antioxidant pills? Well, only food sources of antioxidants appear to be protectively associated with depression. The same can't be said for dietary supplements. This finding may indicate that the form and delivery of the antioxidants we consume are crucial to ensure their best effects. Alternately, antioxidants may just be a marker for other components of plant-rich diets, such as folate. Folate is a B vitamin concentrated in beans and greens. Its name comes from the Latin word folium, meaning leaf, because it was first isolated in spinach. Early studies linking depression to low folate levels in the blood were cross-sectional in nature, meaning they were only snapshots in time. For this reason, we didn't know whether low folate intake led to depression, or if depression itself led to low folate intake. However, more recent studies following people over time suggest that low dietary folate intake may indeed increase the risk of severe depression by as much as threefold. However, once again, folate supplements, folic acid, did not appear to help. Vegetables, including antioxidant-rich tomatoes and folate-packed greens, may be good for the body and the mind. Do antidepressant drugs really work? We've seen that saffron and exercise compare favorably to drugs in treating depression. But how much is that really saying? Thousands of published studies seem to have demonstrated that antidepressant drugs are effective. The key word here, though, may be published. What if drug companies decided to publish only those studies that showed a positive effect, but quietly shelved and concealed any studies that showed the drugs didn't work? To find out if this was the case, researchers applied to the Food and Drug Administration under the U.S. Freedom of Information Act to get access to the published and unpublished studies submitted by pharmaceutical companies. What they found was shocking. According to the published literature, the results of nearly all antidepressant trials were positive. In contrast, FDA analysis of trial data, including the unpublished studies, demonstrated that roughly half of the trials showed the drugs didn't work after all. When all the data, published and unpublished, were combined, antidepressants failed to show a clinically significant advantage over placebo sugar pills. This finding suggests that the placebo effect explains the apparent clinical effectiveness of antidepressants. In other words, improvements in mood may be a result of the patient's belief in the power of the drug, not the drug itself. Even worse, the Freedom of Information Act documents revealed that the FDA knew that these drugs, such as Paxil and Prozac, didn't work much better than placebo, yet made an explicit decision to shield drug companies by keeping this information from the public and from prescribing physicians. How could drug companies get away with this? The pharmaceutical industry is considered one of the most profitable and politically powerful industries in the United States, and mental illness is considered a golden goose, a chronic, common, and often treated with multiple drugs. Indeed, antidepressants are currently prescribed to more than 8% of the population. Just because antidepressant drugs may not work better than fake pills doesn't mean they don't work at all. Antidepressants offer substantial benefits to millions of people suffering from depression. And although the placebo effect is real and powerful, antidepressants do seem to beat out sugar pills in reducing symptoms in the most severely depressed, perhaps about 10% of patients. Although admittedly, this statistic also means that about 90% of depressed patients may be prescribed medication with negligible benefit. If doctors are willing to give patients placebo-equivalent treatments, some argue that it would be better for them to just lie to patients and give them actual sugar pills. Unlike the drug, sugar pills do not cause side effects. For example, antidepressants cause sexual dysfunction in up to three-quarters of users. Other problems may include long-term weight gain and insomnia, and about 1 in 5 people have withdrawal symptoms when they try to quit. Perhaps most tragically, antidepressants may make people more likely to become depressed in the future. Studies show that patients are more likely to become depressed again after treatment with antidepressants than after treatment with other means, including placebos. So even if the mood-boosting benefit of exercise is also a placebo effect, at least it's one with benefits rather than risks. Just reading the dry statistics and all the studies, it's hard to appreciate the suffering. Seeing a graph in which depression scores drop for even hundreds of people doesn't hit me on the same gut level as seeing a single email in my inbox of someone sharing his or her story of physical and emotional renewal. Not long ago, a woman wrote to me after her battle with depression. Shay, in her 40s, had always stuck to the standard American diet. In recent years, she'd been suffering from severe migraines, unbearable constipation, and painful and irregular menstrual cycles. Meanwhile, her depression had become so bad she was unable to go to work. Then Shay discovered my website and began educating herself about nutrition. Soon, she came to understand how the Western diet was potentially contributing to her health problems, not to mention her unhappiness, and she became an ardent watcher of NutritionFacts.org videos. Shay decided to switch to a whole food, plant-based diet. She stopped eating animal products and junk and vastly increased her intake of fruits and vegetables. After 4 weeks, she had more energy and less painful bowel movements. Within 7 months, her bowel movements were effortless. Her once crippling migraines had stopped altogether. Her periods were more regular, less painful, and shorter. And her depression was gone. Just months earlier, Shay had felt so bad that she couldn't get out of the bed in the morning. But by improving her diet, she's now much healthier, both physically and mentally. That's a great example of the power of a healthy diet.